James in chapter number 1 is where we will be at tonight as we go through our series, come back to our series and about 21st century help. The Bible is practical. The Bible is applicable. The Bible is relevant. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise, especially when I say that to our younger generation. It's so inundated with, well, the Bible was back then. The Bible is. The Bible is the Word of God. It's helpful and proficient and sufficient for today as it talks about our God and His care and help for us. Now, I want to come back tonight, and we're going to talk here in a little bit with the aid of Mark Kidd about the idea of technology, particularly equipping us as parents and grandparents and young adults with how to handle it, how to be thoughtful about it. Before we do that, I want to lead through and maybe just walk us through some ideas. Pastor Derek helped us a ton last week with the theology of technology. We have this understanding that technology in itself is not the issue. It's what it's utilized, what we do with it, how we indulge in it, that's so harmful, so hurtful perhaps to us rather than aiding us as it could or should be. And so he did a great job in that. Tonight, I want to speak. I'll be thoughtful of the youngest ears in the room. And I know a lot of our young adults, obviously, are in summer surge up there in the student ministry. But I do want to speak to us tonight about thinking about the issue of temptation, and we are going to link it a lot to technology to then aid us in the practical, what do we do about technology as well. So James chapter 1 probably gives us one of the greatest walkthroughs of how the process of temptation flows for everybody. You know, if you're like, oh, I just struggle with fill in the blank, James chapter 1 addresses that. Well, I don't struggle with fill in the blank, but I have always had a penchant and struggle with. James chapter 1 gives the cycle or the process of temptation that we need to be armed with, aware of, and alert to in our own walk with Christ, and then aiding our spouse if we have one, children, grandchildren, Christian brothers and sisters in the church house as one. Well, so I want us to look at James chapter 1. James, we know, one of the early writings that the church embraced and had, primarily written to Jewish people who had left Judaism and converted to Jesus of Nazareth. Had converted to Christianity. So he's walking through what their faith in Christ will practically look like with one another as they're dispersed abroad because of persecution. And so he says to them in the early part here about God giving them grace through trials and building patience in their life and growth spiritually because of these trials. Now he moves on from verses 1 through 12, and he rolls into verse 13, and note what he says here. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted. Every woman is tempted. We could just say every human being is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lusts and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it's finished, brings forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither the shadow of turning. Of his own will begat he us with the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. Now tonight, we will not necessarily go expositionally or exegetically even through the entire passage. We are going to look at the theme in context and apply it to what we're talking about and our idea about technology and temptation with technology. As we come to this passage here, there have been rabbis falsely teaching there to the Jewish people, even a kind of a proto-Gnostic idea that all matter is evil. And since God's the creator of everything, he's also the creator of evil. And so if you do evil, it's not your fault, it's God's fault. He created everything. So if there's evil and you do it, you're not culpable, you're not accountable. God's at fault, and he understands. Does that not sound like how the Pharisees and Sadducees lived? Like there was always a reason, always a loophole to get out of your accountability and responsibility to God for holiness. Now note this, what James's response to this. That's not how maturing Christians view temptation. What does he say here in verse number 13? Let no man say when he is tempted, I'm tempted of who? God. He says, no, let's be clear. God is holy. God is right. God is righteous. God is not like us, fallen in sin, so he is not tempted by sin. But because he's good, holy, and righteous, guess what he does not desire for you? To be tempted with sin. It is not his desire or his design for you and I to struggle and suffer with temptation. It was never his desire to begin with. But for every man is what? Tempted. You, me, everyone. Can we just step back and recognize it's the height of foolishness to not be aware, I'm not saying indulgent, aware that you are a sinner who enjoys sinning and has temptations on the daily. So you could agree right there, right? Here's what happens. I think we get saved, and man, we know the forgiveness and freedom of salvation, and it's, wow, this is fantastic. It's like a weight's been lifted. Things are great. And then we continue growing and learning. And then I've seen it too many times, not only in my own life, but in ministry in Christ churches, we become more familiar about the Bible and somehow, some way become less dependent and a little numb to the fact that we need to continue growing in our sanctification. And it's almost as if we look at temptation as, well, sin wasn't really as bad. Well, it was bad enough that you were going to deserve hell forever for it, right? I was going to deserve hell forever. So we sometimes, if we're not careful, ease off this idea, and we get into a very secular idea about temptation or about indulgence in temptation. James reminds us sin is serious. Pastor Jordan and I were reminded of this in a stark way for us personally. About 2 weeks ago, we were supposed to help go to this pastor's training conference, and 2 days before, it gets canceled. And I was telling people, like, if it gets canceled, it's either moral or medical. It never is anything else that quick to time. And sure enough, sadly, it was a moral issue. And this guy who pastors a church, this guy who's been a help to pastors in learning about preaching and teaching, sadly, you know what he had done? For whatever reason, he created a bunch of fake social media accounts just to slander folks. Now, he lost it all over this. His ministry, his help to other pastors, his church. And I remember hearing that thinking two things. Wow, that's really stupid. Why would you do that? And then quickly remembering, just because that's not appealing to me doesn't mean I don't struggle in things. That's what he did. But I'd be a fool to think that I'm not tempted and prone to things equally as foolish, stupid, and harmful to me. He says here, every person is tempted. As we think about temptation, we always want to begin remembering that God, in his kindness, his goodness, never desired or never designed us to encounter that, and that he is sufficient even as we go through it. But let's remember this cycle that temptation takes. He says every man's tempted. Now, the idea here with temptation is one of longing and desire, and it's bent towards that which is forbidden or opposed to God's desire for us because of the curse and fall of sin. There's so many things God has given us in his kindness that sin tweaks and distorts. And so often in temptation, isn't that the case? It's not like you're going to jump wholesale away from God in all things in your mind, but it is what? Enough. You know, Eve didn't jump far away in idolatry and rebellion in our mind, did she? She just took a bite of the fruit. It wasn't that far away, and yet it was wholesale rebellion against God. We have to remember here that temptation is that which takes what God has said, God has set forth, God has desired and designed, and it just tweaks it opposed and opposite to God and in unrighteousness, no matter how good it may feel in our thoughts, our emotions, and our physical pleasures, whatever it is, it's still contrary to God, and therefore it does lead to that which is unrighteous and unholy and ultimately harmful to us and God's desire to go and work through us. Temptation often takes, again, the good and tweaks it to what becomes ill or bad. Now, when we think about technology and we think about temptation, it takes something God has created and harnessed that he's given us the ability to create because of his creative power he's given us in being his creation, and it takes it in a bad way. I mean, some of you are sitting in the room alive today because of technology, right? Alive today because 100 years ago, we didn't have the technology to keep you or me or somebody else alive. So that's a great usage of it. But as we talked about last week, we face a new epidemic spiritually, psychologically, even medically now, with the issue of technology that we did not face even 50 or 100 years ago. So it's really important that we step back and remember temptation comes through good things that get tweaked and twisted. Now, James here says, here's the flow. Here's how it goes. You're tempted, and know what he says, of your own lust. I'll restate it and remind us, your temptations are not only legitimate, they are also very detrimental. But don't think yours are better or worse than somebody else's. Sinners are tempted with what? Sin. Do you remember the scene that Jesus gave us that one time? That there's a really holy, pious man praying, and then there's a really sorry dog praying. And remember what the guy does? He just beats his chest, won't even look up, and the other guy's over here like, I'm so glad that I am not like this other guy. And Jesus said, one person went back justified that day. I'm not saying consequentially sin doesn't matter or have more effect than other sins. That's not what I'm saying. We know in God's economy, sin has degree of consequences, does it not? But we are wrong to assume that just because you're tempted with something that you don't see it nearly as graphic or terrible or obtuse to God, that it's not equally as harmful as somebody else that you look at as way worse, or how could they ever struggle with. So let's remember, James says your individual life is hampered with temptation of your own desires and longings. And then he says, here's this exchange that happens. Being tempted isn't the sin. It's the indulgence of the temptation that is the sin and leads to more sin. Nobody said, every man is tempted when they're drawn away of their own lust and then what? Enticed. And if you've done any reading or heard any sermons on this, you know the idea of enticed here in the Greek is the idea, what we would put in our modern times, of setting something. If you've ever gone fishing, I am a terrible fisherman. But if you've ever gone fishing, you know there's one thing you have to do once the fish bites. What do you have to do? Set the hook, right? You got a fish bite and wander all day, and it won't matter until you do what? Set the hook, reel them in. Set the hook, reel them in. That's what temptation does. Being tempted on the daily is part of our human existence. Heeding and giving in to the temptation is where we get on the track of sin and it having its effects in and through our mind, then through our life and our relationships, our stewardship that God has for us. So it hooks us and it starts the process, the cycle. He says, you are enticed, and that breaks forth into sin, the idea of it having a place in your life of dominion and power and accomplishment. And then this cycle just continues to its end result. He talks about it brings forth death. Ultimately, we know the wage of sin is a physical death and an eternal separation away from God forever. We know that. But what James is highlighting here is just the consistent consequences that come with sin. It's always that which is opposed to God. It's always that which is harmful to his spiritual flourishing he's desired and designed for us. So that's the cycle, right? We have temptations. When we heed those temptations, we give a space in our thoughts and therefore our choices and actions for the devil to operate and our flesh to indulge in. And until we come back and appropriate and align with God and the victory he has shared with us in the Lord Jesus, that hook remains and it is a spot that continues to be pulled on and pulled on and pulled on towards its eventual consequence. And it may start off small and ubiquitous, but what does it do? It continues to get larger. Now, I think anybody with half a brain who's been in church for long and society for long would recognize what? We have a major problem with technology, probably in two significant areas. And I want to speak to these maybe a little bit bluntly, but in thought of the young ears in the room. Pastor Derek did a great job of reminding us of the first last week. What is it? Using technology and consuming, consuming, consuming. I'm not talking about maybe necessarily looking up immoral items. I'm talking about the immorality of using our time in such a foolish way as just being absorbed as an insatiable beast by technology. Listen, screen time, as you heard last week, is out of control, and it is poor stewardship in my life and in your life, I suspect, as well, right? Nobody wants to admit to it, but your screen time would tell us a different story, I suspect, right? Let's talk about the one, though, that is rampant, that was spoken of for a smidge last week. You already know where we're going. The issue of technology that is destroying men's lives, women's lives, particularly now young men and young women's lives, and a surprising category, senior citizens. Senior citizens' life, the issue of pornography. Technology being twisted against God's desire, hooking, grabbing, and staying put in men and women's lives. Pastors, deacons, Sunday school teachers, grandparents, all the way down to junior hires, and even sadly below that now. Pastor Derek probably shared the stat with you last week that the average age of pornography exposure is down to about 8 now in America. 8. If you say, I don't know that I believe that, talk to any parent who has a kid in school, Christian school or public school, and it is rampant. I'm not saying your kid is openly indulging in this. I'm saying the exposure is sadly there. We want to be very thoughtful about what's going on in the issue of pornography, whether it's accidental exposure or intentional exposure to the point of what I maybe would use a strong word here, addiction, as it happens because of the process of bonding that God's created us to have and enjoy in our thoughts, in our relationships, in the blessing of marriage, but that pornography perverts and makes accessible in a broken way, in a bonding way. So we want to consider this issue. James says you have temptations. James says if you indulge them, they will hook you and they have a place in your thought life cycle there. And then they are leading that which is contrary. So I want you to consider tonight, especially to the parents and the young adults and the surprising category that's been on the rise for a long time now, sadly, senior citizens, the issue of using technology for the usage of pornography. I won't say all the stats that you've already heard. If you've ever read a book, gone to a conference, or even heard it in church, we've spoken about it here before. The numbers are astronomical. What gets spent, what gets filmed, what gets viewed. And I'm just here to say the growing number is on the younger end and the older end. I was talking to one of my older pastor mentors and asked him, what do you attribute pornography usage in the senior citizen category too? He goes, I don't know a good way to say it. He goes, it's horrific. He goes, but I just think it's because we never even could have imagined access like there is now. And we weren't really thinking or prepared for it. He goes, and then it starts. And just like anybody else, you get into a bad cycle. Grandmas, grandpas, you think, oh, no, that's not the case. Listen, there are even counselors encouraging senior citizens to utilize pornography now. My point with saying this is, let's be very aware of the danger, the real danger it is for your thought pattern, my thought pattern, and then how that starts to infiltrate our relationships. It starts in the soft and what I'd call accessible ways that it doesn't seem as blatant and exploitive, and then it just opens up, unfortunately, canal after canal in our thoughts. I won't bore you because I'm not a physician, number one. And number two, all the names are beyond my degree as far as being able to pronounce them. But the process of bonding in your brain is very intentional from God. Whether that's bonding to someone else, bonding to some kind of substance abuse or usage, bonding to something like pornography, bonding to some kind of hobby or habit, bonding is something God has created in our mind of not only reward, enjoyment, but cementing ideology in and with typically someone else or something else. We want to be very careful because as we indulge in pornography or any other bad usage of technology, it begins to bond us to that as a release or a reward, a release or a reward. Let me give you a few ideas here. What fuels this issue of not only pornography, but the indulgence and temptation that we need to be aware of? If James gives us the cycle and we know how harmful it is, think about it with me. There could be a lot of things that fuel it. But for some people, pornography or beyond is an issue of curiosity, whether that's younger or older, an issue of curiosity. For others, it's an issue of control. Things are out of their control. This is one thing they can control in their life through their usage of it. For others, it's a loss of desire in life or about life, and they're trying to find something to feel better. For others, it's despondency or numbness, and this is just something to fill the time and fill the void in their thoughts. For others, it's misplaced identity or self-worth issues. And for some, it's just poor coping mechanisms. This is not only true for pornography. We could talk about that in the issue of substance abuse. We could talk about this in any other really bad habit that is sinfully hooking us and harboring sinful desire and sinful actions in our life. James says it's deceptive, it leads to further disobedience, and ultimately what God doesn't want, and that is the death of his work in our life in an area or with someone or something, and ultimately, my friends, harming what he's desired for us the whole time of our life. Now, friends, tonight we want to be aware, painfully perhaps so, of our limitations about temptation, the reality that we have them, why are we indulging in them, and then what are we doing about them, so that we are aware of how we need to grow in our faith with Christ and our acceptance and appropriation of the victory he shared with us, and then how do we apply that in a wise way when it comes to technology. I want to say a few things before we have Brother Mark come up here as a way of closure, which is this. I want you to think about when it comes to this cycle of temptation, we will not grow mindlessly or with a lack of proactivity. We'll not be aware or change or be challenged without that. We need to be aware. Ask God to help us analyze what, why, when, whether it's the issue of pornography or something else. Why am I engaged and involved in this? What's going on? What is triggering me in these moments to seek out some kind of coping mechanism, whether it was porn or some other technology issue? Why are we? Be aware. Then be cautiously realistic. What I mean by that is, as you grow in faith-based victory and appropriation of what Christ has done on your behalf, and you see him work out the victory he's already granted you, I would say be cautiously optimistic. What do I mean by that? He's able, but you're going to imperfectly grow. So a day or two of really great victory doesn't mean it is all the way done for the long haul, right? We're going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to struggle and continue to let God help us. And then we need to be accountable. I think one of the grave dangers of Western culture, particularly Christians in culture right now, is how many of us are believing the lie that we don't need to be accountable to anyone else. We don't need to be accountable to a spouse. We don't need to be accountable to any family members. We certainly don't need to be accountable to anybody in the church. That's none of their business. I'm my own person, whatever it might be. And we have this idea that a lone wolf mentality is something God desires and expects for us, and that has never been his desire or design for us at all. If you're struggling with something in regards to technology, whether it's doom scrolling, whether it's something like pornography, as sadly Ohio is given more and more opportunity and there's a bill going forward for online gambling to take place, if it's something like that, or whether it's non-technology related, you're struggling, accountability is your best friend. Other people who know you and love you will be a help to you without being condescending to you, because they know it is to what? According to chapter 1, verse 13, be someone who struggles with temptations as well. And then let's be on guard. As we go forward, and we've had past failures the devil wants to remind us of, let's go forward remembering who the Lord is, what he's capable of, be in awe of him. Isn't that what James says here? He says, listen, every good gift, every perfect gift is from God. You have a good, unwavering, unchanging God who loves you, who has given you his word and desires to change you from the inside out because of it. Our job is to be a hearer and to be a doer as he finishes out the chapter. So my encouragement tonight to my brothers and sisters is this. When it comes to the issue of technology, let's realize there is a theological approach every Christian is called to take with it, as we saw last week. This week, let's remember the temptation that lies in that, and how we're handling that personally, how we're helping others handling that as well. And then let's take practical steps about it.